What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I've had Republicans still tell me that they love Elon Musk, they love Doge. And then I sort of asked them, do you think it's okay if you get sick to pay a higher premium because we made cuts to Medicaid? And they don't agree with that, right? It's okay for Doge to have access to your personal information. They're like, yeah, you know, I believe in civil liberties. It's like you start to see some agreement actually with MAGA voters when you explain to them the impact of this administration on their lives. And I think that's what we need to do, is explain to people how this is going to impact them and how it is already impacting them. And then the second thing we need to do is provide a good alternative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I am getting ready for summer, but I'm excited to be joined today by Congressman Suhas Subramaniam. He is Virginia's 10th Congressional District Representative. He's been in office since 2025. Yes, just this January, he started in the United States Congress. He is a lawyer who has worked in the private sector with several tech company startups over the years. Started his own business, and he previously served as a White House technology policy advisor to President Obama. We'll get into all of that and a whole lot more with the congressman. His voice is one of the fresh ones, new to the scene in this ever-changing Congress, in this ever-changing political climate. I'm excited to have the conversation with Congressman Suhas Subramaniam coming up next, right here on the Michael Steele Podcast.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including Live Dealer, Blackjack, and Craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack, craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. So, you know, I laid out a little bit in the intro about this brother who I watched his election early in the year and the stories written about his coming to Washington and sort of the shell-shocked nature of it all, sort of walking into this crazy on Capitol Hill. But, Congressman, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to the Michael Steele Podcast, Suhas. It's great to have you in the house. We met on set for the first time about a month or so ago on the weekend, and I was smitten. I was impressed with your approach, your poise, your intellect in the conversation. I was like, hey, this is a guy I can kind of hang out with. So here we are.
Well, I'm glad to be hanging out with you. It's really great to be on and excited to be chatting with you and have some time together.
Yeah, no, man, it's really kind of neat to get your perspective, because as I said, you're fresh to Congress. And I was taken by, it was a great article in Time about you and coming to Congress. A new congressman's wild first month is consumed by Trump. This was the headline by Brian Bennett. And I love this piece. It says, Suhas is about to wear through his fourth pair of walking shoes. The 38-year-old Democrat wore out the first three knocking on doors to convince voters in Northern Virginia suburbs to send him to Capitol Hill. He's only been in Congress a month, and his current pair has started to fray as he's paced the Capitol and his district, responding to President Donald Trump's remaking of Washington in the federal government. As a native Washingtonian, I only have this to say. Welcome to the hood.
Thank you. You know, I thought my days of long walking were over when I got elected. But yeah, you know, it's pretty amazing. We're just, our days are sort of just running from one place to another, just trying to be everywhere and do everything. Even in our district work period right now, you know, I'm trying to be everywhere in the district, a lot of miles on the car. But you know, I think it's what people want right now. I certainly feel like there's not enough hours in the day with all that's going on. And I've sort of taken the stance that if they're going to flood the zone at me, I got to flood it right back and
good
everywhere and talk about everything. So,
well, that's what I loved about our conversation on the weekend was you were not afraid of the moment. A lot of folks come to town, and I grew up here in D.C., so I've seen it my whole life. People come here, and they are in awe, as they well they should be to a certain extent. But I think sometimes in those moments, they lose sight of the job, and they get caught up in a lot of the wrong things that come back to bite them later on. But you were very clear, I think, from the very beginning, particularly given the number of federal employees who were being fired in your district, the number of services that were being impacted and affected. So you immediately understood what the job required. Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's something that people don't fully appreciate, not just the what happens to the federal employee in Department X that DOGE has decided is unworthy of public service because, oh, they know better than them on how to do the job. But more importantly, the downstream impact it has on local economies and businesses and communities as those folks, the reality of their situation is realized in the home that's being sold or the grocery store that's being closed because all of the interconnected aspects of what the federal government does and how it serves in our communities.
Yeah, you know, Michael Lewis has this new book out about, you know, who is government. And I love it because it tells some of the stories in a really effective way. And he actually came to my last town hall and we heard from some of the federal workers and some of the work that they do. And, you know, people think that, oh, it's just a bunch of bureaucrats. They don't understand that we've made really, really key investments in science, health, technology, research, and it was a process of many decades to get to a place where we were actually getting really good returns on those investments. And in some cases, when you're cutting off the funding for a project or when you're firing people who are in the middle of doing groundbreaking research, we won't even know what we lost. I mean, some of this damage is irreversible. So yeah, I've talked a lot about the people who are being fired in my district and how it's going to hurt our economy, how it's unfair. They were exemplary workers, many of them veterans, service-disabled veterans. No one talks as much about the contractors either, who did a ton of really important work and had contracts canceled overnight. But the shame of this is also for the entire country and how we're going to miss out on so many important projects and programs that we don't even know what the results would have been. We don't know how much they would have affected us. What if we were in the middle of ARPANET, which became the internet? That was a Defense Department program, and DOGE came in and cut it, right? Would we have had the internet be developed right here in the United States and been a leader on the internet and digital services? Who knows what would have happened, right? Cell phone technology, a lot of the most important breakthroughs over the past many decades came from initial funding from the federal government and research through federal agencies. So it's only a drop in the bucket. So I don't think this is about waste, fraud, and abuse or trying to get the federal deficit in line. It's clearly not about that because on the back end, they want to do a $5 trillion Trump tax cuts for the very wealthy.
Right.
So it's not about the deficit or debt, because the deficit and debt goes way up under Trump by trillions of dollars. And it's not about waste, fraud, and abuse, because a lot of the people they're firing, including the very first people, were the people who were experts in getting rid of waste, fraud, and abuse in government, or people whose jobs it is to actually make sure that these programs run efficiently and don't have fraud on the other side of them. So it doesn't make any sense. I think we can't let folks get away with saying that, you know, this is about government efficiency and this needed to happen for a long time. Maybe there absolutely is some government efficiency that could happen.
Sure. Yeah,
that we can do, but this isn't it. And I think it's unfortunate, and it's a fight that I think is worth taking on, just for my district, for the entire country.
Yeah, and not only is this not it, but here you touched on something that I don't want to move off of too quickly, because I think it's an important feature. It's not a bug. It is a feature of all of this now. And that is, I hope people appreciate that when these agencies are blown up and the 10, 15, 30, 40, 60, 100,000 federal employees plus are fired, you're not getting those people back on the other side of this with the next Democratic administration or the next sane Republican administration. You're not getting this back. These agencies cannot be rebuilt and reconstructed. They're now, to the extent that they still exist, many of them have been hollowed out and will continue to be hollowed out with, you know, maybe three pins in them, you know, the janitor and somebody who comes in every day and turns a light switch off. No serious work will be done in agencies that tapped into the vein of USAID, that tapped into the vein of the IRS, or tapped into the vein of the Department of Education. So what does that landscape look like for the kinds of services that the federal government will deliver in a post Donald Trump America, in which the federal government is about the size of a pinhead in terms of the services that it is able to deliver versus what it once delivered?
This is, I think, the job of the Democratic Party right now, is to tell the story of how what's happening in Washington is going to affect every single American. So you take, for instance, the cuts at the Social Security Administration. We're already seeing the impact of that to our constituents. There's some constituents who are being told now that they have to do everything in person at a Social Security office to fix issues that were created by the Social Security Administration with their benefits, but then they can't get an appointment. All their appointments that they were able to get have been canceled. And we're just kind of stuck trying to help them, but realizing that the people who were helping us help them have all been fired. And the offices are dwindling to where the remaining people are, you know, doing their own administrative work, trying to answer the phones and trying to work on the cases simultaneously. We've already seen some of the impact, but yes, I think part of the plan may be to sow this distrust of government by making the services worse, so that you can justify cuts to Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare later on. I think that's part of the plan, and that is a feature, not a bug, like you said. And so it's our job to make people realize what's happening in the case of Medicaid. In the case of Social Security, I mean, that was a benefit that people paid into their whole lives. That's an earned benefit that they paid into. And so to see something like this happen and see cuts aimed at Medicaid and Social Security, I think is, unpopular. And so we have to tell that story. What's harder to tell, but is just as important, is the cuts to science and research and technology. For instance, the Defense Department just lost many of its best technologists. They actually just quit. They were tired of DOGE. And so they said, well, we can go make a lot more money in the private sector instead of being harassed all the time. and being threatened all the time. So, you know, these were programs where we brought some of the best technologists in the world to our Defense Department to help our military be on par or better than our adversaries, like China and Russia, for instance.
Right.
The future of warfare is not tanks or planes per se. It's going to be cyber warfare, offense and defense. It's going to be having cutting edge technology. And some of that doesn't cost much money. The drones being made by some of our adversaries are actually quite cheap, but they have good technology, and that's what makes them effective. And so we lost a lot of really important people that kept us safe. And then You look at science, it's the same story. A lot of research, a lot of clinical trials for cancer patients, we're starting to hear about them getting canceled or rolled back. And so this is going to make people less safe, less healthy. I think people will die because of some of these cuts. And so it's unfortunate, and it's a harder story to tell, but we still have to tell what people will be losing by some of these cuts.
How much of everything you just laid out there is appreciated by your constituents? You've held a good number of town halls since you came to office in January of this year. You've been seeing numbers around 500 plus people showing up. I loved in one story, one article, you thought, oh, hey, we just have maybe, you know, 10 or 20 people show up for the town hall. And you walk in the room and it's like, oh, crap. Yeah. It's like the entire neighborhood came out. So getting them there has been important. Because they're driving themselves there. It's not anything you're doing. You're just saying, hey, I'm having a town hall in the district at this location Thursday, 7 o'clock. And folks are like, okay. And they're there. But when they get there and you are framing the conversation, because I love the way you started, Democrats have to begin to bring people along and tell this story. Mm-hmm. And you do in your town halls, along with a few other members of your colleagues that I know we have showcased on my air. But what's the response, Ben, when they hear you lay this argument out, when you make the case that you just did, that all of these things are impacted, all of these things are impacting you? Do you get that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I have a very special district in that a lot of people here are in the federal government. That's been incredibly helpful to not just our district, but really to the entire country, because that means people here are telling the stories and blowing the whistle on what's happening inside some of these agencies. I mean, some of the bigger stories that you've seen, whether it's the cuts at the VA, whether it was DOGE sleeping over at the GSA and setting up, using it like an Airbnb, nuclear scientists being fired and needing to be rehired. A lot of the mistakes that DOGE has admitted to were actually stories that started at some of our town halls. And then we told a story and it grew a life of its own. And we were able to be successful in putting pressure and sometimes getting people their jobs back. So, but you know, those are not the normal situations, but there's definitely been successes. But I think we've had people telling the stories. I've actually been doing them in Republican areas as well. And I've had Republicans still tell me that they love Elon Musk. They love DOGE. And, you know, they think we needed to do this. And then I sort of asked them, you know, do you think it's okay if, you know, you get sick to pay a higher premium because we made cuts to Medicaid? And they don't agree with that, right? When you tell them how what's happening is actually impacting their life, like, are you okay with paying higher prices because of tariffs? And they're like, well, okay, the tariff stuff isn't a great idea. Do you think it's okay to for DOGE to have access to your personal information? They're like, yeah, you know, I believe in civil liberties. It's like you start to see some agreement actually with MAGA voters when you explain to them the impact of this administration on their lives. And I think that's what we need to do. That's part one, is explain to people how this is going to impact them and how it is already impacting them. And that's not an easy thing to do, but it's something that we need to do. And then the second thing we need to do is provide a good alternative. We can't just be the party or the people of criticizing one side, because what I found with this administration is when they mess up, they start bringing up Joe Biden. They start bringing up how terrible Democrats in Congress are. They'll blame immigrants. They'll blame other people. And so we have to actually say, well, we have a plan in place that will lead to lower costs, that will lead to protecting, programs like Medicaid, and that, we're going to be proactive and aggressive as well if we're able to be back in power. And so that's also not easy, but I think it's something we have to do, and we have to be bold in doing it. And the last thing I hear is that people don't feel like we are aggressive enough, that we're too timid.
Well, yeah, you're not. Right? You're not. When you start this term with, oh, we're going to take our bipartisan swords and turn them into, take our partisan swords and turn them into bipartisan plowshares. I'm like, okay. Good luck with that.
Exactly. But we're hearing all of that. And I think it's important to listen and be responsive. But it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be important. And that's what I try to do every day.
So, just unpacking a little bit more on the whole MAGA piece. I think I've reached the point where I don't give a shit anymore. I'm sorry. I'm not wasting time or intelligence to explain shit that's obvious. I'm not going to sit here and help you appreciate the fact that if you require the Social Security office where your grandmama lives to close, that she's now going to have to put her ass in a cab or car and go 20 miles or 30 miles or more, especially if she lives in a rural community, to get the services she needs because, oops, after all that time and energy and frustration you spent teaching her how to use the internets, she can no longer use it to get her Social Security benefits. Or she can't, she can't dial the number that you've programmed into the phone to call directly to the agent who was handling her matters, because that agent's been fired and that office is closed. So I'm not going to explain that to you, because you're an intelligent human being living in the 21st century in a country that has blessed you with everything under the sun. And yet you seem to think that this individual who's ordered all of those negative things to happen, and we didn't even turn into what's happening to farmers and small business owners because of the tariffs. We'll get to that in a moment. But just on the things that impact the education of your children, the health care of yourself and your family, and the ability of you to enjoy the fruits of your labor without the oppressive oversight of the federal government, I can't help you understand that if you don't at this point. So this whole grievance mentality that Republicans, now MAGA, have whined about for years, Congressman, trust me, I've been in the room listening to the bitching about what everybody's doing to them. And I'm like, well, we're the party of free markets and free enterprise and free spirit. We go out, we don't let that get in our way. We plow through that. Oh, what they're doing to us on college campuses. Oh, what they're doing. We can't go speak without being interrupted and people throwing things and yelling at. Okay, I get that. I understand that. All right. But now you want to control universities? You want to tell institutions that they can't, who they can hire and who they can't? Could you imagine Barack Obama telling one of the conservative universities out there, and they do exist, friends, they're out there, that I'm sorry, you can only hire teachers that are professors that we approve of. I mean, or you have to, you can't have these programs on conservative ideas and viewpoints because it's an anathema to what we believe in. No, you wouldn't stand for it. So I can't explain that to people anymore. God bless you for doing it. That's what you're hired to do. I get it. But at a certain level, and this is the challenge I think the Democrats face, at a certain level, you just have to stop splaining because they don't want to hear it. And that was evident in the response that you got to some of what you were saying, that they were still trying to make the excuse. They were still looking to blame someone for their circumstance or situation. And at a certain point where you sit there and you just go, why are you taking this point of view when you know that that's not truth? When you know that's not the circumstances in your own household, because yeah, you were getting these benefits and these services. You weren't complaining as a farmer when you were getting those subsidies from the farm bill. You weren't complaining about the socialism that came with your Social Security check or your Medicaid or Medicare payments. So how do you work that space with intelligence and grace in the face of people who, after everything that they've come to see, learn, and experience over the last 10 years, still believe the 2020 election was stolen, still believe the worst economy in the history of the country was under the last 4 years of Joe Biden, as they're sitting here watching their 401k shrivel, the price of eggs not go down but continue to rise. And now, because of the tariffs, everything else that they even want to think about having in their household costing way more money because the idiocracy has put a 10% tariff on everything that comes into the country.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think yes.
There it is.
Good question. I think a lot of people get their news from very narrow sources right now. And that happens on both sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of us just watch Michael Steele on SNBC, right? And some folks just watch the other side, Newsmax, yeah. Fox News, you know, whatever it is. And the news that they're getting tries to tell a different picture and is certainly never critical of the administration. So when they come into an argument or a conversation with me, they're coming in with a different slant or sometimes even different facts. And you know, I just have to, you know, point out like what I believe is the right thing, right? And I have to point out the facts, really. So if they come in and say, well, you know, these high prices and these aren't because of the tariffs, it's because Biden let a bunch of immigrants across the border and
right.
The immigrants raised the prices. Right. And, you know, I just have to say to them, you know, does that make sense to you? What did the immigrants do? Why can't we just agree that when you put a tariff on something, it's going to increase the price? And you tell me whether that's worth it to try to build supposedly manufacturing this country.
I would ask them real quick, Congressman. Okay, so you say that these high prices are because immigrants came across the border. They're paying those prices too. So you think they came to this country just to jack prices up on things that otherwise would be cheaper?
This is a real conversation I had. And I'll just say that I just told them, let's agree to disagree. And I've said that many a times. But
you have.
But what I try to do is find some kind of common ground and just try to win them over anyway. Yeah. And just say, you know, if you let me know if you want a better alternative, that one exists and we're here and I'm here to fight for you too, even if you don't agree with me, and just kind of leave it at that. Cause it's early right now. It's still April. The president just got elected. I still think there's a honeymoon period happening. And I think as people see their 401ks continue to shrink, as they see prices go up, as they see their businesses or farms start to suffer because mm-hmm. no one wants to do business with the US, they can't do business abroad. I think that's going to add up. And I think they're going to realize this isn't just a coincidence, that this administration is not on the right path when it comes to all the issues they care about.
So the tariffs are a big play. Obviously, they have rattled the markets, continue to rattle the markets. You have the piece that I mentioned recently, just a moment ago, the recent efforts to shut down Harvard University, which is a placeholder for other universities that in which the president wants to do the same. Again, folks, that arc of retribution, this is included in that. This is nothing anyone in this country should be surprised about, because Donald Trump is nothing if not consistent as a megalomaniac to tell you what he's going to do, because he believes he's so full of himself that he has to share that. And he does, because he doesn't believe, and I've heard this from him, he doesn't believe you can stop him. Okay. All right. So that's where we come in. That's where individuals like you come in, and which is why it's been so disappointing in so many respects to see so many in Congress just sit idly by as more and more power is stripped away from the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. I just don't understand, Democrat and Republican alike, while we can pitch a bitch over a lot of things on policy, our power should not be something we're willing to concede. I mean, it's one thing if it's power that's benevolently given to you by a king or a chief executive. No, it's given to you by this little document here called the Constitution. And this is where it resides, right? These powers that are yours specifically, what is it that you've learned in this time, in the short time you've been in Congress, which you probably learned a lot, about that aspect of the willingness to just say, okay, yeah, the president can just strip mine these agencies that we fund, that we stood up as Congresses in the past, that we should be funding as Congresses in the future. But Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Doge thinks that they're irrelevant to the service of government, and therefore he has decided to fire all these people, to shut down these agencies and these departments. And the Republican leadership, I'm not asking you to answer for the Republican leadership, because there is no answer for that. Okay, we'll agree on that up front. There's no answer for that. But there has to have been or must be somewhere in some bowel, somewhere in the building, Republicans and Democrats going, okay, fellas, ladies, what do we do to get this back on the right track? Maybe there isn't. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. Look, I'm a guy named Suhas Subramaniam, come from an immigrant family. I never expected to be in Congress. It's kind of still a little surreal that I am in this position. And so I look at it as this privilege I have and this megaphone I have. And so why not use it? And mm-hmm. I think maybe some folks have been here a long time and, you know, at a certain point, they just feel like it's not worth fighting over everything, and this goes in cycles. Right. I don't know what it is, but to me, you know, I was told during my orientation that we can speak on the House floor pretty much every time we're in session and have a vote. And so I just kind of go to the House floor, and sometimes I don't even know what I'm about to talk about because there's so much to talk about, and I just
right.
start talking. And, you know, it's, so
your congressman is going, Congressman, what are you going to say? I don't know. I won't know until I start.
The last time I went up there, I actually didn't know what I was going to say yet. And, you know, I just kind of worked on a speech while I was waiting for other people to finish and then went up there and spoke. But I feel a responsibility and feel this privilege to use the little power I have to kind of help people feel empowered. And I think that's what has confused me sometimes is, you know, why isn't everyone using this power, both sides of the aisle, both chambers? Well, why wouldn't you do everything you can in this moment? So, obviously a lot of people are doing a lot of things, but To me, I look at it as an opportunity to really just get up there and use these fancy new tools I have to just tell stories that people are telling me. We get, I think we've gotten 20,000 emails and more than 5,000 calls, and we answer them all. And then what I do is the staffers that look at those emails, I ask them to compile just stories of the week. And sometimes I'll just go into a hearing and I'll just say, hey, you know, you're talking about the FDA right now. Let me tell you about this person who works at the FDA and their story. And I find that that's actually quite powerful. Even Republicans after hearings have told me, wow, that was a very powerful story. They didn't change their vote, but, you know, at least we're starting to hit a chord there.
Right.
So I'm new. I don't know. Maybe the fact that I don't know like the right procedure or protocol is helping me.
Right.
But to me, it's just about giving people a voice, making people feel like they're not helpless and that they have a say. And even if we're in the minority, that we can be an opposition party, right? So I think that this is all important, and I want to give people that chance.
I love it. Representative Suha Subramanian is my guest, and we're going to take a quick break when we come back. I want to get into a little bit of your background, because folks don't know this. You're a tech guy, and you know tech. You've done tech. And there are aspects of what's happening now that are going to have, in addition to all the other things that are having a profound impact on us, how we're responding to issues around cybersecurity and data privacy are increasingly more important. And I think you may have some thoughts on that. So we'll be right back with the Congressman right after this.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Let's chat about big tech for a moment. Haven't they flip-flopped their ideological stances lately? It's no surprise, or at least it shouldn't be. These aren't democratic institutions or journalistic endeavors. They're businesses tied to driving shareholder value and making a profit. In these tools we use every day, folks, like Google, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook, we are not the customer. We are the product being bought and sold to the highest advertising bidder and at the whim of their latest algorithm's decision on what you or I should be seeing. Now, thankfully, I found a news platform that doesn't use manipulative algorithms to send me down rabbit holes or confuse me with the news. Ground News delivers diverse perspectives, so I get the full story, because after all, that's what I want. Ground News is a platform that makes it easy to compare news sources, read between the lines of media bias, and break free from those pesky algorithms. Using Ground News, you can see the difference in coverage almost immediately. For example, former President Barack Obama's recent comments on Harvard, right? We all know the story there. On the left, you have The Guardian saying, quote, Obama backs Harvard as Yale faculty members support standing up to Trump, end quote. Now on the right, you have The Daily Caller saying, quote, guess whose side Obama's on in the fight between taxpayers and wealthy elite universities, end quote. Now you and I can agree that it's hard to trust what we see in our social media feeds. Ground News helps me, and it should help you too, make sure I'm seeing every news story in the context of the larger media world. With Ground News, you get details about the source of your information, including if the news outlet has a political bent, how reliable their reporting is, and who owns them. That's important. It's a way of empowering you to compare how different news sources from around the world cover the same story, so you get a better idea of what you're reading, the story you're reading, the news you're reading. Expand your view of the news. Sign up for your Ground News account today and get access to the mobile app, website, browser extension, and exclusive newsletters so you can have a well-rounded view of the world you're trying to learn about, think critically about, and understand better what it is you're reading, and to find that common ground between perspectives. Go to groundnews.com/steel today to get 40% off the Ground News Advantage plan and get access to all of their news analysis features. That's groundnews.com/steel for 40% off the Ground News Vantage plan for a limited time only. Right now, groundnews.com/steel. Get it today. Welcome back, everybody. So glad you're here having a good conversation with this young brother, new member of Congress from the great state of Virginia, Representative Suha Subramanian. And he has been in Congress now for, 4 months?
102 days, but who's counting, right?
You're right. 102 days. So you worked at the intersection of technology and government as a White House technology policy advisor to President Obama. And so you've had a very unique platform from which to observe the emergence of tech and government, that intersectionality, and what that looks like versus what it could look like if we get it right and do it right. The Trump administration recently fired AI experts and a number of federal agencies cut funding for AI research. Let's talk first about that, the impact of those actions in this space, particularly given the likes of an Elon Musk now, I believe, with his tentacles still inside many federal agencies, having put trapdoors and backdoors that even though he's no longer the front man, he's still accessing this data, this information, mining it and using it to create, if not install, his own level of AI configuration. So give us a sense of what you learned from the White House during the Obama administration, your time there, and in the context of the work you're doing now and seeing relative to the AI space. And then we'll get a little bit more specific into the privacy concerns and the cybersecurity concerns.
Yeah, you know, I worked really closely with the U.S. Digital Service, which is now the U.S. DOGE service and basically has become DOGE. And so this was 10 years ago almost. And one of the things we did was we had kind of SWAT teams of technologists come from tech companies. They were the ones making apps where you could get your pizza in 5 minutes. And right. The idea was, why can't you get your benefits in 5 minutes? Why can't you get your passport renewed in 5 minutes? And so it was about modernizing and updating government, making it more efficient, better. And we, at the end of the Obama administration, I handed it off to the Trump administration, which actually continued the work. And this has been a bipartisan effort for really the past 20 years to get the most advanced technologists and researchers in our government or working with our government to help make people's lives better and certainly people's experience with government better. And so after many decades of doing this, within 2 months, we've completely wiped out a lot of that progress. And it's not just the people who were fired. There's a lot of other people who we begged to come to the federal government because they had such important expertise. And those people actually resigned because they didn't care for answering DOJ's questions anymore. So we talked about the Department of Defense earlier. Mm-hmm. Also, the U.S. Digital Service itself, 18F is another program you should look up. And NIST, NIST, is an agency in Maryland that you know about. And their work on creating standards and governing technologies like AI and governing cybersecurity and autonomy, UAS, their standards are followed all around the world. And they're seen as a model for how we can responsibly deploy technology. And they fired all the AI experts there. And so now people are wondering, where are we going to get our leadership in the world when it comes to technology, science, and innovation? It's certainly not the US anymore.
Right.
So maybe, you know, us in Europe or us in Asia need to create our own consortium to replace the expertise that NIST has lost. So what we've done is we have undermined our leadership as a country in science, technology, and research. And we have had a brain drain in our federal government that will hurt us for many, many years, if not a generation, if we don't fix it soon.
Why should a high school student who has very strong inclination towards STEM, right? And, you know, looking at math and tech and science as, you know, a researcher or developer, et cetera. Why should they even consider this backyard to your last point about the brain drain, where the new frontier could very well be Asia or Europe, Australia, other parts of the globe? Because we are now forfeiting that. And if this plays out the way I fear it will, it's all going to be funneled to Elon Musk. Note to all the other billionaires out there, including you, Jeff Bezos, you think your space program is getting off the ground? Sucker. Right. That's going to happen. That's not what this is about. This is not about leveling up an opportunity where there's a competitive environment for space and technology, the sciences more broadly, certainly in the areas of research where we and individuals like Bezos with Blue Horizon and other futurists who are going to open up this landscape in the future potentially could begin to build and grow aptitude for the next generation. There's no incentive now. Yeah. As far as I can see, where's the incentive for an 18-year-old who's looking to chart their future when, as you just laid out, we're firing the smart people, we're not hiring anybody else. And it's the platforms that were once there are being obliterated.
You know, I actually heard from a PhD candidate in a STEM field who decided to just drop out of their program because of the uncertainty in their field of research. And, you know, they don't know what they want to do anymore, but they know that science is not valued in our country right now and it's under attack. And they don't want to be one of their researcher friends who gets laid off abruptly or whose funding gets cut or who's in the middle of a 5-year research project to maybe a clinical project to help save a certain form of cancer or cure a certain form of cancer. And the funding gets cut off in year 3. So even though we've already spent 3 years worth of money on it and we're 2 years away from the breakthrough, pencils down, we don't care about that research anymore. That is what's happening on the ground already, even 3 or 4 months in, and it's only going to get worse. And you can talk to researchers on both sides of the aisle. This is not, I think both parties probably agree on some of this. We're losing a lot of our expertise and a lot of our leadership in these fields. And that is one of the things that made this country a leader in the world generally was that we were seen as the place to go as the leader in these fields and as the go-to when it came to science and innovation. And we're losing that. And that's not only a shame, but it's actually going to costs us many, many lives. It costs us industries, costs us leadership, and even security in some cases. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, I say that we need to continue to tell the story. We need to continue to make sure people know what we're losing and see if we can try to reverse some of these things. That's all we can do right now. They've reversed some of it, like a little bit of it. They've admitted mistakes but haven't fixed them. But I see it as a responsibility. Certainly, we're going to have the elections. We've got one in Virginia this year. We're going to have one next year. But I don't just want to complain. I want to see them pressured into action. And then I want to tell the story of how this is impacting people.
One other piece of this, two pieces that I wanted to get your thoughts on, because in addition to the AI piece, which is in itself a sort of the new frontier, right? And we're sort of seeding that ground in terms of, you know, individuals like you just described who, you know, thought they could make that commitment to, you know, that science, that technology, but clearly that's not the interest of this government or this administration. You still have the data privacy side of the equation, which is, you know, sort of the old school stuff, right? You know, we've been in that space for a long time now, it's as well as cybersecurity, which has become more prominent and more important in the context of how we secure that technology. And that had been a real, you heard conversations and you know from your service in Congress now about how that is playing out with our adversaries like China, which is notorious for stealing that technology. And so cybersecurity is incredibly important in that vein. So contextualize for us what those marketplaces look like for data privacy, meaning my own information, your information, corporate information, and the data that we, you know, we seemingly just endlessly pour into this thing that gets picked up by God knows who for whatever purpose. But then, of course, the more broad issue around the cyber technology and the security thereof that flow into our defense technologies and systems, our technologies and systems that touch on the work at NIH or MIT, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, the way I try to explain it to people is, you know, when you go to the grocery store, when you check out, you give the clerk your credit card, right? And they swipe it. They usually don't look at the number, but they swipe it and it's stored there. And that's fine. You get your groceries. But, you know, would you give them your social security number too? Would you empty your wallet and just let them have it? I mean, that's so, right now our data privacy practices are not in line with what I think people would consider acceptable. Mm-hmm. And so there's absolutely a project here when it comes to protecting people's privacy. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, I talk to folks and about what's going on in the administration, and something that comes up over and over again is I can't believe they have access to my data. And that data used to be really, really safeguarded. And now we don't know what's going on with it. I think there was another story recently about a DOGE person who I think got access to data, either Census or another agency. And it's some of the most sensitive information you can imagine. Yeah. And even though it's not identifying sometimes, oftentimes it is. And you can absolutely pinpoint a person and learn everything about them and use it against them later on, right? So that's what happens in authoritarian countries, is that they own the data, they own the systems of communication, they own the media, and they use that against political opponents. And so we've started seeing sort of the creeping of this authoritarianism and other aspects, but this mm-hmm. is the part that I think doesn't get talked about enough, is how this administration is trying to use and weaponize this data against people. And I think that will continue to happen if we don't speak out about it more. And this is a bipartisan issue. I talked to a lot of Republicans. One came to a town hall and said that, you know, I agree with you when it comes to civil liberties. And so, I said, well, you know, if you agree with me on civil liberties, then you shouldn't be a fan of DOGE or anything mm-hmm. the administration is doing, because what they're doing is they're going after people. They're gathering this data and we don't know how they're going to use it yet. And so this is the story that needs to be told as well. We already have problems with our data privacy practices as a whole, but now you're getting to a place where this data can be used against people, and that's a scary thing and something we need to fight.
Well, sir, I'm glad you're on that front line with your background and expertise and knowledge look legislatively at how we go forward in protecting our data, our secure networks, making sure that they are secure. And at the same time, you know, giving a voice to it in a way that people look, Congressman, the biggest thing right now is help us get past the partisan blinders that have been placed on our eyes a lot of times willingly, but as you mentioned a while ago, also unwillingly through the media and the things that we consume that makes us feel good and sounds good, but actually isn't good for you. So thank you for that, you know, because it's important. I'll let you get the last word on this, because you've been in the job, as you noted, for a little over 100 days. And what's your takeaway, I guess, but what gives you hope, but what also still concerns you?
Sure. You know, what concerns me is that this administration isn't listening to some of the voices of reason within it or from the outside, and continues to disrespect people's rights, people's liberties, people's freedoms, and certainly hurt our economy because of really outdated and backwards economic theories. And that's hurting every American's wallets. And then they have this other plan to undercut everyone's benefits and, you know, have a brain drain in our federal government. So there's a lot that's just certainly disconcerting, but the hope that I feel is from the people who are speaking out, the people who write to me and whose stories I share on the House floor and in committee, and mm-hmm. and whose stories are getting in the paper because they're brave enough to speak out. I think our democracy still exists, even if it's under attack. It's still working, and people are still, you know, paying attention. And even these special elections that happened recently give me hope that people mm-hmm. are starting to understand. I mean, we saw a 15-point shift in pretty much every race away from MAGA. And so that gives me hope that people are paying attention. Virginia will be the next sort of barometer.
It's going to be a doozy.
That's right. So we're going to send another message to the country and to this administration. But I'm certainly hopeful. I think as a Democrat, I feel like we need to continue to be aggressive and speak out and not let anything go and not let anything slide. And then we also have to present a good alternative and be open and welcoming to the people who, you know, disagreed with us or attacked us in the past, but are starting to see how bad the administration is for them. We need to welcome them back. And we may not have to agree on all the issues, but we can agree that we want a free country, fair elections, a strong democracy, and a good economy. We can agree on the basics, at least, and work together on the rest. But right now, you know, we need to make sure that we're speaking out on everything. But it gives me hope that people are fighting back and are stepping up.
Well, Congressman, as a Republican, I'm hopeful with you. And I appreciate your time and your refreshing energy and engagement on the things that you're bringing to the people of the 10th Congressional District in Virginia. You're right. There are going to be some big opportunities and hurdles ahead. But look, if we in addition to recognizing those things that bind us together as citizens, also lift up the humanity of each other, I think we can deal forthrightly with issues around immigration and education and culture and all those things that have been used to divide us, and to say, well, if Suhas is doing well, I'm doing bad, or if Michael's doing bad, Suhas is doing well, if I'm doing well and you're doing worse. That environment is not conducive to how the country was built. It was built on, if you're having a hard time, I'm having a hard time. So we work through the hard time together. If you're having a good time, I'm having a good time. We build through the good times together. And when there's inequity, we fight to fix that. And so, folks, you know, you've got two men of color here telling you don't trip out on DEI. I know a whole lot of white folks that benefited from the fact that their grandparents and aunts and uncles came here because it was a diverse place to be. They recognized the equity of the American dream and wanted to make sure that they were included. God. And nobody lose some sleep over that. They just saw opportunity.
Our biggest DEI class here in Virginia is actually veterans. Or mostly white, so
right.
Like DEI, they actually mean veterans too.
There you go. That's it. That's exactly the point. Don't let them use a word in a way that discounts who you are and what you've already contributed and continue to contribute, and certainly what your families have contributed to this great nation. Representative Suhas Subramaniam, thank you so much, man, for being a part of the conversation. Really appreciate spending a little bit of extra time with you and getting to know you a little bit more.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun. Looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Absolutely. So, because there's still a dinner that you and I need to do. So we get our people on that.
Absolutely.
After the podcast. All right, my friends, that does it for our time together. Like I said, it's such a treat to have the congressman from the 10th Congressional District of Virginia, Representative Suhas Subramaniam. He's a good man. I think you heard that in his voice. And in his words, check out the work he's doing in Virginia and in Congress. When he calls a town hall, if you're in the neighborhood, stop by. I'm sure he'd want to talk to you. Until next time, everybody, be safe, be well, take care of each other out there. And I'm telling you one more again, stop listening to stupid. Okay? Just don't do it. It is not in your interest to do that. All right, guys, take care.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.